Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Wednesday to all of you. We are midway through the week. It is Ravens week. We are gradually, slowly getting ourselves ready for Sunday. Ravens-Texans right here on Sports Radio 610, 3:25 p.m. Seth and I will be in the stadium for the pregame show. We found that out this week. We will be in the stadium, Seth. We will be one of just a handful of people not wearing a uniform of some sort, whether it's a player, a coach, a referee. I mean, you may wear a uniform. You like to get into that mode on game day where you put on your old number 91 jersey.
Oh. Yeah. Hey, Sean, I might go do that just to, you know, to be the first guy off the bus,
yeah,
so to speak, just to try to intimidate the Ravens.
Scare the hell out of some people. I like it. I like it.
They'll be like, is that Carlos Watkins?
Yeah.
I thought he was bigger and much darker than that guy. Yeah. But that guy looks not that hard to beat at all. So that's why I'll rope-a-dope him is what I'll
that's
do.
That's it. That's it. Get him feeling complacent, a little overconfident. That's right.
So I took a picture with Whitney Merciless a few years ago, and mm-hmm. I put it on. This was back before I had quit Facebook forever. I put it on Facebook, and you know, a lot of nice comments about like, "Oh, hey, Whitney and Seth, we love you guys." And then one guy has to say, "Look at that, Whitney Merciless, huger than our former nose tackle. Man, we sucked." I'm like, dude, I wasn't this emaciated state when I was playing NFL football. That was like 60 pounds ago, you son of a bitch. And then I quit Facebook.
Did you? That's what forced you to quit Facebook? One guy making a little comment, little snipey comments, you know, at you?
Well, yeah, you know, because it's never the insults that do me in on social media. It's idiocy.
Yeah.
People can call me all kinds of names, and it genuinely doesn't bother me. It's when somebody makes a stupid argument or does something illogical that it drives me insane.
Right? Are you offended by their argument? No, I'm offended by the stupidity of their argument. I'm not offended that their opinion is contrary to mine. I'm offended that their opinion is contrary to mine. It makes no sense.
If I would not be offended in the least if you said, "Wow, Seth looks skinny and frail." It's that you think that I looked this skinny and frail when I was actually playing football.
Yes.
I was insulted on behalf of Dom Capers, Charlie Casserly, and Bob McNair, God rest his soul.
All right, so Seth, it's Ravens game week. And look, I know you have been grinding on some film. I've been going and rewatched the Ravens and the Browns. I'm looking at some of the Ravens highlights from last year. I'm not a football mind, you know what I mean? I can only imagine what's going through Anthony Weaver's mind right now. He's getting twisted into a pretzel. So I've been grinding on this stuff you have. So I try to get away from things for a couple hours last night, right? And so there's some NBA basketball on. And I was really looking forward to the Clippers and the Nuggets, the Game 7, because the Nuggets are trying to come back from down 3-1 for the second time in the postseason. Not even the conference finals yet, and they've come back from down 3-1. And I just want to escape from football and from the Texans for a little bit. You know, not because I'm not looking forward to the game. I am. I'm still trying to figure out how they're going to win this damn thing on Sunday. But I just want to get away and clear my mind and watch a little basketball for a little bit. And about halfway through the third quarter, I'm waylaid by this graphic that they put up on TV.
Oh, that.
Completed seasons without a conference finals appearance.
Yeah.
By any of the franchises in the four major sports, NFL, MLB, NHL, and NBA. A relevant statistic, a relevant graphic, because the Clippers are by far the franchise in any of those four sports that have not been to a conference finals. Completed seasons with no appearances in the conference finals. The Clippers with 50. The Hornets with 30. The Blue Jackets, that's a hockey team, Houston. They're located in Ohio. 19, and then tied for fourth, The Texans and the Pelicans with 18. I can't even escape the Texans when and some of their ineptitude in the postseason, quite honestly, while I'm trying to watch a basketball game, by God.
Now, and that graphic was a little bit confusing. They didn't explain it. It came across my Twitter timeline. It's not like those are the four longest streaks without going to a conference championship.
Right.
It's that these are the teams that have never been to a conference championship.
Right.
And this is how long it's been. And we are currently the leading stakeholder in the
I would say probably the only stakeholder in the NFL, right?
Well, like
everybody else has been to a conference finals appearance in the NFL.
I guess they – I feel like the Browns got off on a technicality here because the new Browns, which is a completely different franchise than the old Browns, but because they Art Modell allowed them to take all the records and everything. The new Browns still haven't been to a conference championship, and they came in what, 99? So no, I reject this. The Texans are not the longest tenured franchise.
Seth, you're not judge and jury. The Browns brought their history with them. There's only one solution to this, and it's something that I proposed many times. The McNairs need to step up and scratch out a check to the Adams family to buy the Oilers franchise history. They need to buy their way out of this graphic. That's what needs
to
happen.
Then we will have been to a conference championship.
Two in a row back in 79 and 80. Just ask John McClain at 8 o'clock today. He'll tell you all about it. Love you, Blue.
I would say, no, let's please not go there, please. I can't stand 7 minutes of that.
I may ask just to confirm. John, can you confirm?
Hey, John, were the Oilers a team that existed? Well, let me tell you about seven
Hop
stories.
Hop up here on my lap, Seth, and let me tell you about a time. Let me tell you about a guy named Bud Adams.
So, yeah, that's a long stretch. But if Bill O'Brien, the GM, could finagle buying all the history of the Oilers from the Adams family, then I think you could make the statement. Sounds like the Browns are claiming that they've been to a championship game. I think Bill O'Brien could then claim he's been to a championship
game. We're going to get a tweet today from Adam Schefter, Ian Rappaport. The Texans have traded 4 first-round picks to the Tennessee Titans for the Oilers' history to get their way out of this graphic, to distract from the fact that Bill O'Brien has failed 4 times in the postseason to get his team to the conference championship game.
Sean, this is the one thing you have to remember about beating good teams in the NFL.
Yeah.
Who are the two teams that defeated the Ravens in the regular season last year?
I know Cleveland was one of them. It was early in the season. Yeah,
the Chiefs and the Cleveland and the Browns. I figured you would have remembered the Chiefs. I didn't know if you would have remembered the Browns.
I remembered the Browns because I was listening to Cleveland radio earlier this week, and they brought that up. They're like, well, we beat them last year, the early part of the season, and now they beat us 38-6. Yeah, I remembered Cleveland. Yeah,
I went. I was actually going back, and I found an article about, you know, this is a fan-based website in Baltimore that talked about the myth of Lamar Jackson not playing well when behind.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that it's a little bit of an unfair myth that Lamar Jackson himself plays poorly when they're at a deficit. I think it's just that the style of play that he's best at isn't well suited for coming back from a big deficit. You know, and we saw that with the Titans. We saw it. The Browns was much more of a back and forth affair. The Ravens recaptured a tie score a couple times in that game, and it wasn't until the fourth quarter or so that the Browns really pulled away.
Yeah.
The Chiefs, you could say that the Chiefs game was one where the Ravens just simply couldn't score points fast enough. And their defense would have had to have been perfect for them to overcome the Chiefs in that game. So I think that's probably a good example. So when people say, hey, the key to beating the Ravens is all you got to do is get to a lead early. All right. Well, that's kind of hard to do, too, because their defense is really good. And Lamar Jackson tends to score a lot of points as you go along. But it's worth noting that, yeah, I think that that is at least one valid key to victory. You've got a much bigger advantage playing from ahead than from behind versus the Ravens.
Seth, I think just conventional wisdom, without having gone back and watched all the Raven games, and especially the Raven games, the few that they did fall behind in, the conventional wisdom says, well, they struggle because their offense is built around Lamar Jackson running the football. He's not a great passer of the football, but he has actually put up some pretty good passing numbers. He led the league in touchdown passes last year in week one against the Browns. I rewatched that game this week. He looked pretty good throwing the football. I guess the question becomes, how different is it throwing the football from a lead where you're able to, the run game is still something that's a threat, and you're throwing into open windows, as opposed to throwing the football where everybody knows you have to throw the football in order to get back into a game?
The big difference is, too, that when you're still running the ball, you're creating third and fours, yeah, third and threes versus third and tens. Because if it turns into that kind of game, you know, where, look, if you try to have him sit back there and be Pat Mahomes, it's just not going to happen. If you just pass 10 straight times, he doesn't have the natural arm talent to be able to do that. But when you mix the running in, man, he's got enough arm talent and he's just accurate enough that they can do some lethal things through the air. I think just based on one game, it looks like he's taken that next step in terms of being an NFL passer. I think he still has some accuracy issues, but it's his legs first and foremost that sets everything else up.
We'll circle back to this at the bottom of the hour and ask, what are the Texans thinking today after getting a chance to watch the Ravens in depth over the last couple days on film? But first, Tillman Fertitta, he was on CNBC doing his weekly appearance yesterday, and he revealed his plans for who's going to lead the Rockets moving forward. We will hear from him next. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Ravens Texans this Sunday. There is some basketball news. Tillman Fertitta was doing his weekly appearance on CNBC yesterday. Tuesdays with Tillman, they call it. And they usually mix in a basketball question. Been relevant the last few months because of the pandemic and the bubble in Orlando, and the Rockets have been in the postseason. Relevant now because the Rockets are looking for a new head coach. He was asked yesterday, Fertitta was, by the host on CNBC, where does it begin and end with your search for a new head coach?
Well, it begins and ends with the general manager. And you can talk to me about business all day long, but I personally wouldn't know what coach to hire. That's why you have a basketball operations team that's made of a half a dozen people that use all kind of analytics and experience. And, you know, they'll make a recommendation to me, as they do about everything. And I'm the sign-off guy. Okay, that's it. And I wouldn't know how to interview a basketball coach. Now, if you want me to go interview a CEO for a company, I'll be the first one to say I think I'm better than anybody else. But, you know, to be successful in business, and I say this in my book, you better know what you know and you better know what you don't know. And I surely know what I don't know when it comes to basketball.
Tillman, getting a plug in for the book at the end. That is awesome. Real quick here, follow-up question to this was, is Daryl Morey's job safe?
Daryl Morey is your GM. He maybe ran into a little trouble about this time last year with some comments about China. Is his job safe?
Daryl Morey's job is safe, and I'm sure he's going to pick the right head coach.
All right, so Seth, we've got a window into how this is going to take place. And Tillman had said this earlier in the year that about picking a head coach, that it's the general manager's decision. So Daryl Morey is, at least according to this interview, going to get to pick the head coach, and Tillman is saying that he's just going to rubber stamp whatever Daryl Morey decides to do with the head coach. I found the most interesting part of this just something that is a stark contrast to Tillman's predecessor as the owner. I think if you were to ask people, which owner do you think is more involved day-to-day, more hands-on, maybe meddlesome might be the word some would use if you look at it from a negative standpoint, I think people would say, well, I think it's probably Tillman Fertitta, just because he's got a more outgoing, bigger personality than Les, who was more of a, who had a personality for sure. But I mean, Tillman's got his own book. He's on TV all the time. He's a very public figure. Les wasn't that. And yet, reportedly, Les Alexander was the one who picked Mike D'Antoni. Like that was his decision. And it actually ran contrary to what some of the other people over there wanted to do. It sounds like Tillman's doing the exact opposite. This will be Daryl Morey's show now, from not only the roster, but who's going to be handling the roster.
Yeah, I think that it seems like Tillman Fertitta has a good idea of what he does and does not want to do with his money. He's very, very good at that, you know, like, and that's something that transcends industry. It's like he knows exactly what he wants to do with his money. But when it comes to how are you going to allocate that money, I think he trusts Daryl Morey a lot. And look, Daryl Morey has a track record of doing things that a lot of other general managers have not been able to do in the NBA. And I'm not trying to give him any consolation prizes or anything, but if it weren't for the fact that Kevin Durant had gone to an already championship team and created one of the greatest powerhouses sports has ever seen, in all other years in the NBA, that Rockets team is a championship team.
Yes.
So, and he's done this multiple times where, you know, they climbed that ladder to the point where they're pushing into the conference championships, and he's done it without tanking, which isn't, he's not the only NBA team to have done it without tanking, but I think that he just it's sometimes tempting to think that because he hasn't won a championship, that somehow there's a plethora of other people out there that are better than what he is. And I don't see it. I don't know how you can make an argument for really anybody and say, yeah, this guy's going to step in and be way better than Daryl Morey.
Yeah, and you know what? It's funny you say that, Seth. I was thinking about that this morning when I was listening to that audio. And I think the conventional wisdom, air quotes, around Tillman buying the team was that, man, he is in a business, his restaurant business, where there's very high turnover and it's very, very performance based. And if a restaurant is not performing well, then you make changes quickly because it's not a real super high margin kind of business. And that Tillman's just going to be very cutthroat when it comes to winning and cleaning guys out, firing guys if you're not performing at that level. I guess there is something to that, maybe at the roster level or with players, but I think Tillman also knows from the restaurant business and the casino business that finding people that are good at their job at the management level and the general management level is really, really hard to do. Like, it's really hard to find good people to run multiple casinos. It's really hard to find good people to run an entire brand of restaurants. Like, Tillman doesn't, he's got 600 properties. He's not out there at all 600 managing things on a day-to-day basis. He needs good people running those things. Those are really hard people to find, and the equivalent in the NBA is Daryl Morey. And you're right. If you fire Daryl Morey, then the only reason you're doing that is because you just feel like it's time. We need to make a change. And Daryl is, they haven't won a championship while he's there, but there's no question he's absolutely one of the best at his job. I truly believe that.
I do object to one thing he said in there, Sean.
Yeah.
It's this, any of the Fertitta family listening, bear with me while I make this point. I don't believe he'd actually be a good choice to be your CEO. If you're out there looking for a CEO right now, I think Tillman Fertitta is a master at running his own business. I feel like if he had to answer to a huge board of directors or something, things might get real hairy real quick. I don't know. I feel like within 6 months, Payne Computer Repair would be changed to Tillman Fertitta's Fantabulous World of Computers or something. He'd move in too much.
To be fair, I think his offer was only to help interview CEOs. I don't think he was going to services up as a CEO. I think he was offering kind of almost like a consultant. You know what I mean? Like, I think he was offering to help interview CEOs.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll take that. Yeah.
Hell yeah. I just want him in the interview because he's entertaining. Tillman, can you help me interview this guy? Sure.
No, he's like that classic personality that I don't know. You know, they always say, like, well, the first, to be a good boss, you got to be a good employee. I'd say that's true like 99.9% of the time until you've got like especially rare talent and charisma, and then all bets are off.
Right.
And you can basically just do whatever the hell you want to do, and you're going to end up rising to the top because you're that rare. But you can't. That's the classic, like, do as he says, not do as he does.
That's a good way to put it. All right, what are the Texans thinking today after watching the Ravens for a couple of days here? We will dive into that next. All right, before we get into the Ravens and what the Texans are thinking watching the film, I think the Ravens are a scary football team. They can put you in a mind space, in a headspace where you're maybe feeling intimidated, maybe feeling like, oh, 0-2 is on the horizon. But Seth, then I see a tweet from Jack Easterby and everything is right in the world. It's okay. Do you want me to read Jack Easterby's tweet to get you into the right frame of mind to attack this Ravens topic we're about to do?
I want to hear it, and I want to imagine that I'm grumpy Bill O'Brien as I hear it. Hold on, let me close my eyes and be upset or agitated about something. I was just watching last year's film, and I saw that play where DeAndre Hopkins and Kiki QT ran into each other, and then Deshaun Watson got sacked. All right, go ahead.
It's a great day to have a great day.
All right, Jack. I know. I gotta be positive. Okay.
Yeah,
okay, Jack. I promise it'll be a great day.
Listen. I'm gonna give you a musical reminder, Seth. It's a great day to have a great day.
Yeah, I got it. I was being Bill O'Brien there, not. Who's this? Who's this?
Travis Tritt. Ready?
That's right, Travis Tritt.
And it's a great day to have a great day. I'm Jack Easterby tweeting at Seth Payne.
No, I was being Bill O'Brien there.
You were being OB? Okay.
I was pretending I was being Bill O'Brien, yeah.
Okay. Tweeting at Billy O. Yeah.
That's what he does, right? He gives. I mean, that's part of why he's there, right? I mean, he's making a pretty good salary. Is
pep talk.
Give Bill O'Brien a pep talk.
Pep
every
talk.
Day.
Get him ready for the Remind Baltimore him. Ravens. Yeah.
You got to keep things in perspective. Sometimes you're a football coach, and it's easy to lose perspective on things, and that's why you start flipping out about every little thing.
Yeah.
And then your team gets stressed out.
Right, right.
And then that's no good, so you got to keep it loose. I think that's what Jack is there for.
I like that Easterby's putting it out on Twitter, too, though, because I can sop some of that gravy off of the positivity for myself. You know, don't just bogart all that stuff for O'Brien. Share some of that positivity with the rest of us who are trying to get ready for the game this weekend, too. I don't know if you know this, Jack Easterby, but this game's going to stress out a lot of us this weekend, not just people in the building over there. Think about your talk show hosts, like me and you, Seth. So
Yeah. I don't need somebody telling me it's a great day to have a great day. Frankly, I'm like, okay, could you save your freaking energy for something actually meaningful and productive?
Mm.
You know what the key to not getting your ass beat by Kansas City is, Sean?
What's that?
Showing up and having a good day whether you feel like it's a great day or not. Mm. If you can have great days when you actually feel like it's a miserable day, then you, my friend, are an actual football executive. Until then, I don't need you to be smiling and all happy, joy all the
Sounds
time.
Sounds like someone
just
needs...
Could you just shut up and go to work? My goodness.
Sounds like I've got a co-host that needs a little dose of Travis Tritt in his life right now. Close my eyes. Hard times at NRG.
It's not all that hard there right now. This is a team in the Baltimore Ravens that got shellacked by the Cleveland Browns in their third game of the season last year.
Yeah.
I don't know what they were thinking in Baltimore when they started off. Did they start off 1-2 or 2-2
last year?
It was early in the year.
I think it was 2-2. Yeah,
2-2.
And yada yada yada, they became 14-2.
Yada yada yada, playoff exit.
Right. Yeah,
first,
that's true.
After the first game.
All right. So let's dive into this then. Let's get into this here. Bill O'Brien talking on Monday about using last season's film to study the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, you definitely are watching all the games because you only have one game to go off of this year. You know, yesterday's game. So you've got to go back and review all the games. You know, obviously the game that we played against them. You know, every game, their playoff games, their regular season games, and you just try to do. You're always just thinking about how are they going to attack you in all three phases. You know, how do they see you? They may see you differently than they see Pittsburgh, or differently than they see Cleveland, or you know that's something that we have to do a good job. That's every week. You know, how are they seeing you relative to how you play, your style of play? So, you know, in order to do that, you got to watch all the games. So, you know, we're grinding through that and. You know, we'll come up with a good plan, and then we got to go out there and execute it.
All right, so they got to go out and execute. We'll talk, I'm sure, if not today, then later in the week about what the Ravens see in the Texans. But let's start to dive in, Seth, not so much to last year's game, although I know you've got thoughts. You watched last year's game. I think there's plenty that you can sprinkle in from last year's game with what we're about to hear. This is last week. These are some of the things that the Ravens, within the last 4 days, have done to another NFL team. And I think if you just go through a few of the highlights, it pretty much encapsulates the diversity of this offense and the assignment that Anthony Weaver and his troops have here on Sunday. Let's start with the ability to attack downfield with Hollywood Brown.
Lamar Jackson, pistol formation. Off the play fake, deep drop. Great protection. He's going deep. Looking for Hollywood Brown at the 20-yard line. Brown makes the catch, and he's down to the 15-yard line. Jackson to Brown. A 47-yard gain, and the Ravens are right back in the Grillmates red zone.
Yeah, it was early in the game on Sunday, Seth. That was when the game was still being contested, and it was just a flick of the wrist from Lamar Jackson, Hollywood Brown getting downfield. What does Marquise Brown, what does he do to a secondary, especially within the specter of this offense that Greg Roman runs?
He's the tricky and scary thing about Marquise Brown is that he can get behind the secondary even when you're like exclusively focused on not letting him get behind the secondary. He's just so fast. And I think that he's kind of this trend of wide receivers where people used to be really down on these tiny wide receivers. And then I suppose DeSean Jackson kind of blew everything out of the water where you see, oh, okay, just because you're small doesn't mean you can't play on the outside. And extreme speed just beats the crap out of a defense. If I were to go back to last year a little bit, I think that one of the big things in that game was that Lonnie Johnson was still so raw and playing like such a rookie, just grabbing people, didn't have confidence with his feet, just not reading the run very well. Lonnie Johnson, depending on when he plays in this game, we got to talk to John McClain about what the hell happened with Lonnie Johnson last week.
Yeah, point that out. I don't know if a lot of people noticed. Tell people what it is
you're talking about. Lonnie Johnson is probably, Lonnie Johnson was not playing cornerback out on the outside until the second half. The NFL hasn't released its all 22 yet, so I haven't been able to go back and like figure out exactly when and where Lonnie Johnson started playing. But I don't know if he was, there are a lot of people asking, was he disciplined for some reason?
Right.
Like, why was he not starting when we thought he was going to be starting? And why was he, from what I could tell, not playing until the second half? If it was a discipline issue, I'd sure like to know. And I'd also like to know who's actually starting at corner. Is Vernon Hargraves actually your starting cornerback?
Well,
or is it Lonnie Johnson?
Yeah, that's the thing to me where I go, okay, something's weird. Because Lonnie Johnson was he was on the outside with the ones in the entire training camp, even when Gerrion Conley was available to the Texans. Now, Gerrion Conley's on IR right now, but it was thought that Gerrion Conley was going to be one of the guys on the outside. Even when Gerrion Conley was available, Lonnie Johnson and Bradley Roby were the two outside corners on the ones the entire training camp. And Vernon Hargraves is not thought to even be a guy who plays on the outside. He's thought to be more of a slot corner, and there he is against the most prolific passing offense that we've seen in the last 5 or 6 years, lined up on the outside against Sammy Watkins and Tyreek Hill and against all these weapons on the outside. So, yeah, that was weird. And so, you know, I agree with you, Seth. Hopefully Lonnie Johnson has taken a step forward, and hopefully he gets a chance to put his skills on display when the game is still close in the first half.
Oh, man, I got a stomachache just now. I'm not going into this game thinking that the Texans have zero chance whatsoever or anything. I'm not being that way. But I keep trying to talk myself into this, and then we start talking about things like the secondary, and that's the part that still makes me nervous as hell. Right now, the way this secondary is composed, it's hard to figure out a way around it.
Yeah.
There's other spots, there's other position groups on this team where I think they'll get better as the season goes along. It's going to take Gerrion Conley getting healthy and Lonnie Johnson, when we see him playing meaningful football, like, okay, let's hope he's taking a big leap this year. It's just absolutely key and crucial that Lonnie Johnson has improved.
Texans got done in by a rookie running back last week, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, rushing for over 130 yards and a touchdown. He was a first-round pick for the Kansas City Chiefs. The Ravens took a guy in the second round that I was kind of hoping the Texans would take a good look at, J.K. Dobbins out of Ohio State. He didn't have as many yards as Edwards-Helaire did in week one, only 23 yards, but pretty impactful on the ground in the red zone in goal-to-go situations.
Give us to Dobbins. Picks his way through a crowd. Dobbins dances to the one, gets to the goal line. In for the touchdown, J.K. Dobbins, his second of the day. And what a great day for Ravens rookies. Patrick Queen on defense, Dobbins on offense, and with 13 minutes left to play, the hay's in the barn.
Yeah. Seth, I don't know, man. I was told. Would you like that hay is in the barn?
The hay is in the barn. I've been enjoying this. The hay is in the barn, and then also the Grillmates Red Zone. I hadn't ever heard anything described as like a Grillmates Red Zone or anything like that in the middle of the broadcast.
I don't even know what Grillmates is, but it has the word grill
it's
in it.
It's seasoning.
It's making me hungry. Okay, well now I'm even hungrier.
Yeah, it's a rub of some sort, I think. So we were
told throughout the offseason, like, hey, this is a veteran kind of year. I wouldn't count on much from the rookies. This is from Bill O'Brien. And yet, here are the two teams that are definitively better than the Texans in the AFC. Clyde Edwards-Helaire rushing for a buck 30. The Sneed kid had the interception in the Chiefs game. He's a rookie playing cornerback, picking off Deshaun Watson. And now,
hey, listen, Sean.
Here come the Ravens, who had Patrick Queen, their first-round pick, at 8 tackles and force a fumble, and their second-round pick, J.K. Dobbins, scoring 2 touchdowns in his first game.
The Ravens draft, though, too. Like, you can say this about almost any team in the league except the Ravens. Usually they get something that looks like a good pick, and you always have to say, with other teams, well, yeah, I mean, we'll see how it actually pans out.
It always pans out.
The Ravens have this knack for just drafting exactly the right guy for their scheme. It doesn't matter if there's already a player. Do you know when they drafted Jonathan Ogden, they already had two good starting tackles? Like, they just flat out get it. It's been 25 damn years of this. It's incredible.
Yeah.
They just know what they're doing. And when they drafted Patrick Queen and J.K. Dobbins this year, everybody had those moments like, yep. Perfect guys for them. That's the perfect draft.
That's so funny you say. I remember having a conversation with somebody about this right after that draft when one of those report card articles came out. You know, that when they put a report card on a draft before the guys even jumped on a flight to go sign his contract, you know, for the press conference. They're like, the Ravens draft gets an A. And I remember people saying, well, you know, these report cards. I'm like, no, slow down. You can grade the Ravens today. Like, that, of all the teams, you can grade the Ravens. Like, that, no, it's going to get an A. Like, that guy's going to be good. That guy, they drafted Devin Duvernay in the third round. I think he's going to be a good football player for them. Like, they just know. You're right, Seth. It doesn't matter if it's Ozzie Newsome or whoever succeeded him. They know what the hell they're doing over there.
That, I'll tell you what, like, whatever. I would argue that in some respects, the Ravens have the superior football culture in the league. When it comes to actually knowing what kind of guys they want and getting a certain kind of guy that just flat out, he's got the right blend of intelligence and toughness and just football instinct, all that stuff. I think they do a better job of it than anybody, including the New England Patriots. I mean, the problem is, and this is where I worry about the Jack Easterbys of the world. Yes, the Patriots have a certain culture that's worked out very well for them, but you cannot separate that from the fact that they've also had two geniuses as the driving force behind their greatness over the past two decades, Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. So it doesn't mean that the Patriots' way is definitively the best way. Honestly, I would say the Ravens' way is the best way.
Yep. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday, Sports Radio 610. We are going through what the Texans are seeing when they go back and watch the Ravens film from this past weekend. Another guy that they drafted in the third round, not a rookie, but a guy they drafted 2 years ago in the third round, who's become probably the next tight end after this season. You know, we've seen tight ends now, Seth, take the tight end market from a $10 million a year market to a $15 million a year market within just a matter of a couple of months. It went from Austin Hooper being the highest paid tight end at $10 million a year to Travis Kelce. Zach Ertz is going to get paid here pretty soon. George Kittle. They're getting around.
Hey, did you see Zach Ertz got in a shouting match with Howie Roseman at the end of practice last week?
It's contentious right now.
And now they suck.
Yeah.
Take that.
Yeah. How's that for culture?
Zach Ertz.
Yeah. How's that for culture? it's a $15 million a year market. Mark Andrews is still on his rookie contract, but he'll be up for an extension after the year. He may be the next big thing at the tight end position, to wit this catch on Sunday.
As Andrews shifts to the right side of the line. Ricard in motion, play action. Jackson looks right, throws over the middle. He's got a man wide open. One-hand catch for the touchdown, Mark Andrews. And the Ravens convert on their opening possession.
Yeah, Seth, not really a big step down in weight class from Travis Kelce to Mark Andrews when it goes from week one to week two for whoever's checking tight ends on this defense.
Yeah, and I don't think Mark Andrews does as much as Travis Kelce does to get himself open. Mark Andrews is just the right man in the right place at the right time to be playing with Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
I think he's and I'm not taking anything away from like his ability as a receiver and everything. I don't think he's as electric as those guys, but it doesn't matter because he's on the same page as Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
He fits into that offense really, really well. And when you watch the way linebackers and safeties kind of just get frozen like deer in the headlights because they're so confused by everything that's going on in the backfield, it makes it really hard to simultaneously figure out what Lamar Jackson's doing, plus actually cover tight ends well. And that's the big I don't want to put him in the same category as Travis Kelce, and yet it is. Like, you can't – if Mark Andrews goes off, it means that you're just not dialed in and really paying attention to what and figuring out how to stop the Ravens.
Yeah, we're not scouting tight ends. I mean, Travis Kelce's the better player than Mark Andrews, but Andrews is really good. We're just looking at it from the perspective of how can this guy hurt you, and I think your point is a good one. He can hurt you similarly to Travis Kelce. There's no question.
Well, and I don't know. I think maybe he's got better hands than Travis Kelce. I don't know. Like, Lamar Jackson's not incredibly accurate.
Yeah.
But again, because Lamar Jackson is such a threat that he gets guys wide open through the scheme. He and Greg Roman, the offensive coordinator, basically get guys open, that Lamar Jackson doesn't have to be incredibly accurate.
Yeah.
He's just got to get the ball in the general direction of Mark Andrews, and he comes down with it. That touchdown, that first touchdown pass this week was a hell of a catch by Mark Andrews.
Oh.
I mean, that was a really amazing catch on what could have easily been an errant throw, you know?
Yeah. No, a true one-handed catch, no doubt about it. Now, here's the scary thing for the rest of football, Seth, is that we know what Lamar Jackson can do on the ground. He threw the football really well on Sunday. He's a decent passer of the football. He's not Patrick Mahomes, obviously, but he doesn't need to be with the way that he runs the football. But the game on Sunday against the Browns was actually, I mean, I know the final score was 38-6. This thing was a game deep into the second quarter. You know, deep into the second quarter, this game was a 10-6 game with 3 minutes to go in the first half. And Cleveland had been moving the ball throughout the first half. It looked like a game. And then all of a sudden it wasn't, because Lamar Jackson was able to engineer two touchdown drives in the last 3 minutes of the half. The last one culminating, or I should say the first one culminating here.
J.K. Dobbins in the backfield, pistol formation. Dobbins will carry, sweeping to the left. He's got the edge. He's got a touchdown. His first in the NFL, and the Ravens extend their lead.
Yeah, so it was a J.K. Dobbins 3-yard touchdown run. The second one, Seth, 7 plays, 69 yards in 35 seconds, ending with another touchdown pass to Mark Andrews. These last two drives were, to me, truly the reminder of just how absolutely scary this offense can be with Lamar Jackson pulling the trigger.
Well, and I think sometimes it's a little too easy to say, well, the Ravens can't score quickly. That's the problem with the Ravens. Those two drives in total, it was 168 yards on 17 plays. They did it in a total of 6 minutes and 23 seconds.
Yeah.
That's pretty fast. That's a pretty fast way to. That's a pretty fast way to get 14 points on the board.
Great take, Seth.
So I think Lamar Jackson, and again, when I talk about his inaccuracy, I'm talking about that's his passing ability, but like his actual quarterbacking ability has improved. He's taken a step forward. The decision making, all of that, the way he sees the field. And again, that's you've got 20 different attributes on a quarterback. And it looks like Lamar Jackson is on his way to fulfilling like 18 of them, with maybe a little bit of inaccuracy at the intermediate range. And who gives a damn if that's what is the biggest issue?
Seth, the last 6 minutes of the half looked more like someone was doing a controlled workout and a tryout for Lamar Jackson than an actual NFL football game. And here's what I mean by this: it's almost as if somebody, when the Ravens took over the football with about 7 minutes and change to go in the half, it's like someone, because they took over at their own 1 yard line, by the way. It was 10-6. The Ravens have the football with about 7 minutes and change to go in the half, and the ball's at their own 1 yard line. If you're Cleveland, you're kind of feeling it a little bit at that point. You're going, man, we're moving the football. We just got to cut out these drops and these turnovers, and we're in this game right now. We got them backed up to their 1 yard line. We're in the mix right now. Meanwhile, on the Ravens sideline, the way the rest of this half played out, because keep in mind, it was 10-6 when they took over the ball at their own one. The half ended 24-6. So they scored two touchdowns in the last 7 minutes. The first drive was 10 plays, 99 yards in 5 minutes and 48 seconds. It's almost as if there were people on the Ravens sideline going, Lamar, here's what we need you to do. We need you to have a long, drawn-out, multi-play, grind-down-the-clock drive to grind down the rest of the half. Okay, I'll go do that for you right now. No problem. 10 plays, 99 yards, 5 minutes, 48 seconds. And the lo and behold, they get the ball back with 41 seconds on their own 31-yard line. And it's almost as if the scouts walked up and said, here's what we need you to do now. We need you to engineer a quick 35-second touchdown drive in 7 plays. No problem. Will do. 7 plays, 69 yards, when the Browns knew exactly what was coming. You know, the only thing you could do at that point was throw the football, because there's only 40 seconds left. And he goes 7 plays, 69 yards in 35 seconds. It was just a remarkable 7 minutes of offensive football to watch.
You know what we need, Ben? This is from now on. Whenever we go on a 20-minute slobber fest about some quarterback like this, I need producer Ben to pull Jadeveon Clowney saying that he's trash about Bortles.
Oh, okay.
Because that's what I felt like. I needed that at the end. Just like, whatever, he's trash.
Yeah.
He used up all his good football. Dez, Our beloved listener is upset with us, Sean.
Why?
She's a big Steelers fan. So when I was going off about how the Ravens were so good at scouting, she sent me a bunch of nasty gifts.
Oh, don't worry. They play the Steelers in week three. There will be plenty of good things to say about. We said, hey, Dez, we said plenty of nice things about the Steelers yesterday on the heels of them nearly ruining Daniel Jones in week one of the NFL season on Monday night.
The Steelers, this is what I would say about the Steelers. I think the Steelers used to have the leg up in just consistently and constantly drafting the right kind of guys to be Pittsburgh Steelers. They lost their way for a little while several years ago, and they seem to have regained it, you know. Their current defense is a good example of how they've regained it. But they had the advantage of having Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah.
You know, the Ravens have been muddling through with an assortment of Joe Flaccos and lesser Joe Flaccos.
The Steelers always find wide receivers, too.
That's what I would say about the Ravens, obviously, is that they just haven't found the right quarterback until now. Sometimes it takes a while.
Yeah, it's hard to do. It's very, very hard to do. All right, download the Radio.com app. If you are someone who's just getting in the car now, you can rewind to the beginning of the show, Radio.com rewind feature. Download the app. It really is an awesome, awesome app, one of the fastest growing apps that you're going to find anywhere on the interwebs. All right, as we roll on here on a Wednesday, Payne and Pendergast with you. Not to overreact to 1 week of football, but for everyone clamoring for a top 10 Texans offense this year, I think Bill O'Brien has figured out how to game the statistical system. That's next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.